Good day, listeners. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. We're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. Forgiveness is a topic that gets brought up over and over again in the space of healing from betrayal. But before you tune out, let me encourage you to stick around for my super practical conversation with Carla Downing on this topic. Carla is the founder of Change My Relationship and has been on the podcast multiple times to help us think through such important relational issues like boundaries and grief. Her many years of experience helping couples in very difficult situations comes out in this interview on forgiveness. In the episode, Carla gives a robust definition of forgiveness and then walks us through 8 practical steps that are essential to the process of forgiveness. So to learn more about Carla and her ministry, visit changemyrelationship.com. For even more resources, visit bebroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And dear friends, we'd love it if you would rate and review the podcast after listening, because this really does help others to be able to find this podcast and the content that we provide. All right, let's dive into today's excellent conversation with Carla. Well, all right, Carla Downing, welcome back to the program.
It's really nice to be here. I've been looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, you know, you're becoming quite the regular. We've had you on multiple times. And in fact, I was just looking up, the last time we had you was last June, so June of 23. And you were talking about helping men understand a woman's grief process, which we got a lot of great feedback from that, because, you know, sometimes being able to help the opposite gender understand the other one is so, so vital. But for maybe some of our newer listeners that are, maybe they haven't, they don't know about you yet, or they don't know about Change My Relationship, can you share a little bit about what you do and your ministry?
So my ministry is primarily to help Christians navigate difficult relationships. It isn't just for betrayal, although that's one of the things. It could be any type of narcissism, addiction, just a personality disorder, mental illness. It could be just somebody who's irresponsible, just the general dysfunction that we get when we grow up dysfunctional families and we just don't know how to be healthy. So any and all relationships, child, spouse, ex-spouse, parent, grandchild. And I teach principles, 10 life-saving principles to help people navigate those difficult relationships. And then all the little extra little tools based on biblical truths. And they're very practical and very, very helpful.
Yeah. And your website is changemyrelationship.com.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. And we'll circle back around to that at the end of our conversation today. But, you know, Carla, we're going to talk about a topic that is quite honestly talked about a lot in this space of Christian ministry, dealing with sexual brokenness and what that can do to a marriage, to a relationship, and the betrayal that comes from that. And we're going to talk about forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I sometimes feel like, wow, isn't that a topic that just gets brought up over and over and over again? So before we actually even get into what forgiveness is and then kind of the process that you've outlined for that, can you just share a little bit about why it might be important to keep revisiting certain topics that just come up over and over and over again in this healing process?
Well, for one thing, there are people, like you said, that are new that haven't heard it. Two, we bring in a lot of misunderstandings, things we've maybe heard, things that we've been taught, things that we pick up from teachings in the church that we apply to our situations and apply them incorrectly because we're misunderstanding the application. And just people will say things to us that cause us to walk away with an assumption that actually can harm us, can leave us stuck. And forgiveness it's not easy. It's something, especially when we're talking about betrayal, that is a lengthy process. And it also comes up again, any time that you're dealing with betrayal and a new situation comes up that triggers memories, triggers a loss, and it, or there is a new consequence that is related to something that came out of the betrayal, you're going to be walking through a little piece of forgiveness again. So it does come up. Now, I don't want people to feel discouraged saying, I'm never going to be out of this. No, it is going to literally give you a process to use when those things come up so that they don't have to sidetrack you and cause you to go all the way backwards.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think of, okay, would anybody who understands anything about Christian faith be surprised that maybe the topic of confession comes up over and over and over again? And why is that? Well, we have something to confess every day. Like we miss the mark in some way. So, and that's obviously can be highly related to this issue of forgiveness. So I think we just need to maybe not be so surprised that certain things are almost cyclical in the sense of how they're going to come up. But with forgiveness, let's start just with a definition. How would you define, like, what is forgiveness?
Well, forgiveness is letting go of the desire to seek revenge or to see payback for the hurt and the harm that someone has done to you. So it has to do with those feelings of just, I can't get past this. So being so stuck on it, I want to see you hurt. I want to see you suffer, or I want you to pay me back. I want you to do something to make up for this to where I'll be able to forgive you. And those are the things that scripture talks about letting go of the desire for revenge or retaliation or to see the person suffer. And it talks about letting go of the desire for the person to have to pay back or to suffer specifically to make up for what was done. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not work that a betrayer needs to do, because there's a whole lot of it, but that's different. That's a healthy process. But the unforgiveness that would drive that would be, I want to see you pay. You're going to make this up to me. And it is impossible to make it up to enough to undo all of the hurt. And that's where forgiveness comes in.
Yeah. And obviously the context that we're talking about specifically in this conversation is around when there has been a sexual betrayal in that relationship. And so when we think about betrayal, trauma, healing, why is the topic of forgiveness, or why is this process of forgiveness so essential to betrayal, trauma, healing?
Oh, because it is trauma. There is nothing more personal than to have somebody who loves you and is committed to you, who is supposed to be completely faithful to you, to have broken that vow and been unfaithful in whatever level of betrayal that is, in whether it's sexual addiction, affair, and or both. It's so painful, so personal, that it is a very complicated, road to forgive, and it is lengthy. And the betrayer wants it to happen quickly, because it's for every second that it's not happening, it is a reminder of his betrayal and what he did, and it's a trigger for shame. And it cannot happen quickly. And so the betrayer has to have the ability to, like we've talked about in the past, to detach from the spouse's or partner's pain and process where the forgiveness just doesn't instantly come, and allow that person to work through it. So both of them need to understand the process for it to be able to be a healthy force and not an unhealthy force, because there's nothing that it is really almost spiritual abuse at times when someone will say to you, okay, I did all of this, but you have to forgive me. That is not something that is okay to say to somebody that's been wounded, because, okay, we know that that's the hope that that will happen, but to use that as basically a pressure to try to force somebody to to say it in a way that it's okay, one and done. You know, you have to forgive me. That means we're done. There's no more process. There's no more bringing this up. There's no more discussion, is actually using that abusively, spiritually.
Yeah. Now, before we actually get into the process, I have one other question that's related to that same question. Why can't a betrayed partner just skip forgiveness? Why does it have to be part of the process for their own healing? Can't they just circumvent this somehow and still find healing?
That's called repression and suppression. And I firmly believe, and we talked about the grief process the last time I was on in June. And if you'll remember back then, I firmly believe that the forgiveness process has to be a part of the grief process. Mm-hmm. And if you do not work through the full grief process, you do not work through to acceptance, which means you do not get to a healthy place where you can say, okay, that happened. Okay, I'm choosing to process that and I'm choosing to move on. But so if you don't work through the forgiveness process, you're stuffing all of that and you're going to have, but also, you know, like I said, this is a trauma and trauma means it has triggers and trauma means that there's things that are going to come up. And if you haven't forgiven, when a trigger comes up, it is going to be like opening a floodgate of feelings and emotions. And there is going to be a lot that's going to come out that isn't going to be healthy.
Yeah. So a little bit of what I'm hearing you say is the wound of betrayal does not just magically disappear because you want it to. Forgiveness is the pathway,
right,
that you are going to receive the healing that you need so that you can move on,
yes,
whatever that looks like. Yep. So let's dive into the process. You've outlined some things here of what does this process of forgiveness look like. So take us through the process.
Well, the first one is that, and the handout that I've given you is my generic handout that I use for anybody that's walking through the forgiveness process. So I am going to point out a few things to that nuances that of how to apply it to a betrayal.
And just so the listeners know, we're gonna put this handout, a couple of handouts that Carla's given, into the show notes so that you can also have these resources.
Yeah, and it might not be a bad idea to stop for a second and print those out and have those in front of you as you're listening to us so you can put notes to it, and also to recognize they're pretty detailed so you're not going to have to write everything we say. And also you can listen to podcasts over and over again as many times as you want. So first, and here's what people try to sidestep and shorten, and when somebody says to somebody that's been betrayed, you have to forgive. You have to tell them you're going to forgive them. You have to forgive them now. That they're just basically not recognizing step one. Step one is that you have to know what you're forgiving. You got to know not only what you're forgiving, you have to know the ramifications of what you're forgiving. You have to know the consequences that are in your life because of what you're forgiving. You have to know the losses that you are going to endure and the things that you are going to have to have in your life related to that forgiveness. I mean, there could be, and there you can just imagine the things that we could be listing here. So you've got to, first of all, know, and with the case of a betrayal, it's usually with a discovery, and there's a whole lot that hasn't been discovered at first. So to say when a betrayal has just recently been discovered, forgive me, it's what am I forgiving? How much is there? Like, how do I know that? And I can tell you, as much as the men would want her to just say, okay, I'll forgive you, and then never have to go further. Listen, all that's got to come out. And we know that, as painful as it is, or she will always be wondering what else happened. What do I not know? And there will never be that place of trust and security. So it has to all come out, and you have to work through what am I forgiving? It's the consequences and the acts. It is the losses, forgiving the fact that I'm going to have to live with this, the losses that I have to bear with. That's step one. That is a very lengthy process. And you'd say, well, wait a minute, in the middle of that, you're not forgiving. You are beginning the process of forgiveness. And yet you might not even know if you can get there at this point, because the feelings are so strong. And remember, we talked about the grief process with, first of all, you're numb, you're in shock. And that is a time where you're just barely functioning. And then you're going to go through some anger, and you're going to go through the bargaining, and then you're going to go through the sadness. And when we get into the acceptance, if we've worked through the forgiveness process as part of our grieving process, knowing what we've lost, then we're going to come out in that acceptance. And part of that is going to be the ability to just forgive and move on.
So let me ask a question about that just first step, because I think sometimes, you know, a couple might recognize, even the betraying spouse might recognize the need for what we might call full disclosure. And there's great processes for doing some of those kinds of things. But what happens, though, when maybe a couple, and I'm not saying that you might have the answer to this, it might just be, hey, these are things you also have to work through in terms of forgiveness. But what happens when a couple maybe has gone through that process and a wife who has been betrayed still feels like there's got to be more, there's got to be more? How can maybe she work through that in a way that says, okay, how can she know when she's got what she needs in order to say, I know what I'm forgiving?
Yeah. So it, first of all, she has to know whatever process it is. And that's why a lot of times we do the, you know, where we do the interview, where we're looking at, you know, where it's showing if you're the lie detector, where we go through the whole process and he discloses everything and then does the lie detector test where it shows if he's telling the truth or not. I think there's a part of it of if she sees him genuine, she sees him working through explaining things. If she stops discovering things accidentally, one of the worst things you can do is find one thing and, oh, I've told you everything, and then discover something else and I've told you everything, that the trust isn't going to come. So if the process is happening, unfolding in a way that shows, you know, the truth is coming out, I think there is a point where she can begin to feel comfortable with, okay, I know enough to have an idea of everything that happened. And I maybe don't want to know every detail. You've got, they have to decide, how much do I want to know for me to be comfortable? I mean, you can ask too much and traumatize yourself even more. So it kind of is a slow process of figuring out, how much do I really need to know? And how much how many details do I want to know? Maybe enough is enough. But it's just that place where you can feel comfortable enough that enough has come out, you know, that's happened. And then you can get to a place where you're like, okay, I'm good. I maybe don't want to know anymore. But if there's resistance and there's continual finding of new truths, it's not going to work.
Yeah. So once they've gone through that first part, then what comes next?
Then normally what we do is we stop and think, have I played a part? What part have I played in this? Now, I want to be really careful when we're dealing with betrayal. It is never the spouse's fault that the person chose to betray. Right. Never. I don't care if you have a terrible marriage, if it's a sexless marriage, if it's the person does not get a pass for choosing to betray, choosing to go into a sexual addiction, 0%. And at this point with betrayal, when you're in the shock of that, it's a little bit soon. With this one, for betrayal, I would actually put it towards the end, because normally in the forgiveness process, you want to stop and think, okay, what part did I play? Like, let's say in a divorce, what part did I play in the, you know, falling apart of this marriage? Or, you know, what was my part? Well, I reacted very intensely and unhealthily to the problems and, you know, that kind of thing. With the betrayal, I'd actually like to see this further down, because
You don't want that assumption that it's their fault.
Yes, yeah. I do not. And with sexual addiction, spouses would have often said, well, if you'd only give me more sex or have done what I wanted you to in the bedroom, then I wouldn't have gone out. Or if you weren't fat, I wouldn't have gone out. Or if you were nicer, or if you, no, none of that is an excuse. None of that is okay. Sexual addiction is 100% belongs to the person who's addicted. The betrayal was the person's choice. And no matter what the marriage problems were, there will be a time later at the end of this process where you will look at what contributed to maybe the distance, or was there, did my reaction make, you know, make it harder or whatever, but not for this one. I'm going to say, let's make an arrow on your paper and move that to the end because of all the problems that could come up if you do that a little bit too early.
Yeah. And then after, so after understanding what I need to forgive and then maybe doing some introspection, or, you know, since we're dealing with trauma, that would come a little bit later. What's next in the process?
Then it's the grief. And that's where you get to feel all the messy feelings. And that's the tough thing. That's the part where you're literally, you recognize the shock of how your life has been turned upside down and nothing feels real and you question everything. And you're wondering if, you know, how you could be so stupid and how you could miss it. And you're beating yourself up because you're like, you don't know how come you didn't, you're seeing, oh, now I see it. So you're doing all that and you're working through the feelings and they're messy and ugly. So first the shock, when you get out of the shock, it's usually anger. Anger at yourself, like I said, for not seeing it. Anger at God for allowing it. Anger at your spouse or partner for doing it. Anger for anybody else that participated or helped. Or you're just a whole mess of a ball of anger. And these can go in any order. They can go back and forth as you're processing. And then you have the bargaining. And that's the, what could I have done to make this not have happened? And that might be, I could have had sex more. I could have been nicer. I could have seen it. I could have recognized it. I could have never married him. I could have, you know, had better boundaries, or I could have been prettier. Maybe if I would have, you know, been sexier, or if he only wouldn't have gotten at that job, or if he only didn't have that friend, or, you know, if he only wasn't shown pornography when he was a kid, or, you know, if only God had done his part and changed my husband's heart, or if only God had kept him from, you know, having that kid come into his life. And it's okay to feel all of this, because this is the second part of the first part of shock in the grief process. Is this is too much. Your subconscious, your body knows too much, can't handle this, got to numb you out. Going to put you into a place of shock emotionally, maybe even physically. Then you feel the anger, and then you're starting to grapple almost with like, how am I going to come to terms with this? And the first thing you got to do is you got to use up, so to speak, all the excuses and the things of what could have prevented it. So in the end, you are finally going to go, okay, but it did happen. I can't undo this. We desperately want to undo it. And when we get to that point where we recognize, okay, I can't undo it. None of those things happen. I recognize all of those maybe would have prevented it, but they didn't. And so then you hit the sadness and the grief and the feeling of the loss. That's what a lot of people think grief is. And then as you work through that, and that, again, you go back and forth as you get a little bit more discovery, a little bit more information, a little bit more of a lot, seeing how it's affected you. And then finally you come out the other end where it's acceptance. And acceptance says, okay, it is what it is. Now what? And that's the question of how am I going to move forward with this? And that's where forgiveness can start coming in. Is,
yeah, and I think it's always important to point out on the grief stage, not even just in this process of forgiveness, but just grief in general, that getting to that acceptance does not mean that what was done is acceptable.
Nope.
But you're getting to the reality that this is what is.
Yes.
Like I accept what is reality.
Yes.
And that's really important because it helps you. Because I think initially, I mean, I know I've felt this when there have been things that I've needed to forgive others of in my life. I'll go into it like I want to be able to change what has happened.
Exactly.
But the reality is you can't change what's happened.
Uh-uh.
Anything in the past, it's done.
Right.
And so you have to grieve to a point where then you accept that that has been done.
Yes.
Even though it was unacceptable for them to do it. And why is that so important to get to that kind of place of, if I could put it this way, maybe a little bit of like soul calm?
It is.
Before you actually get to the choice of forgiving.
Well, when you asked me before, you said, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about and ask you where people get stuck. This is one of the most common places I see people stuck, is not in skipping acceptance, skipping the grief process, and getting stuck in a place where they can't accept it. Because if they get stuck in the place of, well, what if it didn't happen? How could it have not happened? Like, I'm still upset that it happened. I'm still upset that I didn't see it. Well, that is a stuck point. You can't move to forgiveness if you're still completely churning and struggling with the fact that it did happen. How can you forgive it if you're not even 100% willing to accept? Accept means literally to put out your hand and receive what is offered, what is put in your hand. So if you say, okay, I'm going to accept the betrayal, everything that it is that you're going to be forgiving, I'm accepting it. Okay, now I'm going to decide what to do with it. One of those things I'm going to do is I'm going to work towards forgiving it. So if you don't accept it, and you're resisting it, it didn't happen, I don't want to deal with it. How can you forgive what you haven't even received and accepted or taken as real?
So now that somebody has gone through that grief, you say the next part is to choose to forgive. Talk about what that actually looks like.
It's an act of the will. It's just simply, and people usually do this first, and then they're uncomfortable with the fact that they still have feelings. So I put this after the grief process. You're going to go through a lot of those messy feelings before you say, okay, I'm choosing to forgive. So I've accepted that this happened and all that comes with it. Now I'm asking myself, now what? And I'm saying, okay, I'm going to choose to forgive this. Now, I'm not saying reconcile. Okay. That can be that's a different question. I'm going to choose to forgive it. I'm not going to hate this person forever. I'm not going to want to see the person suffer. I'm not going to want to see the person I'm not going to expect this person to continually pay me back and make it up to me and make me feel better and make the restitution. That's completely different than showing you're healing and changing and trustworthy. But the whole thing, because you can imagine if somebody who is the betrayed spouse is going to say, forever you're going to make it up to me and I'll let you know when I'm done. That won't work. That is not going to be a relationship that will work, because one, that can be pulled out and used against the person at any time and unbalance the relationship. And it can be used manipulatively and punitively. And it basically puts that person in a lesser than position, which is not a partner. It's very unhealthy. So you cannot live like that.
Yeah. And now what I find interesting in this process is this is basically kind of like step four that you have in the process. And I think people think that's where it ends. You've got four things after that.
Exactly.
So take us on these four other things that you've got as part of the process of forgiveness.
Yeah. So the decision is an act of your will. It is literally, I'm going to choose to forgive. And if you're still a little bit stuck, you can do this. AA says, God, help me willing to be willing. So you can literally pray, God, help me willing to forgive this person. And that's choosing, that's part of the process of choosing to forgive. I'm choosing to forgive this person. I need your help. I need you to give me the ability to do this. I need you to work this out in me. So that's a whole step in and of itself. The next one is change your thinking to let go of your desire to get personal revenge. And what that is, okay, I'm not going to, any thoughts that come into your mind of, I want him to pay, I want him to suffer, I want to see him hurt, you've got to capture those thoughts and flick them away and replace them with, I'm choosing to forgive. I'm choosing to forgive. I'm choosing to forgive. And you're going to change. So you've got to pay attention. It's like catching thoughts and switch them, because it's literally, forgiving is an act of the will, and the emotions will come later. And sometimes the emotion will be triggered or a memory will be triggered. And you remind yourself, I I forgave that. I have forgiven that. So you are, so you're basically, the next one is, and this is super important, and you have, it is, you have to empathize with your offender. And oh, that's a little bit later, because you're going to work through all of these mucky feelings. But the number one thing that is in any process to forgive, Christian or non-Christian, somebody that talks about forgiveness, is empathizing with the offender. And I mean, putting yourself in that person's shoes. Now, remember, when you understand the reasons that this person did what they did, and it could be started off watching porn when I was a child, could be, or looking at porn, it could be wounds from childhood, it could be a very difficult point in that person's life where they were very wounded, where they then were vulnerable and they got involved in a workplace affair. That, so it may be understanding that they had a medical problem that contributed to some changes, you know, in their thinking, or so whatever that is, or the understanding the absolute mechanics of addiction, of how your brain changes and how it literally the craving and the pull and how hard it is to break free from addiction. And understanding that the, here's where you can have empathy for the losses that the betrayer is now experiencing, and recognize, oh my gosh, this person has also gone through a lot. This person has been in pain in keeping these secrets. This person has been miserable. I wouldn't want to be this person. I hate being betrayed, but I would not want to go through the pain of being the one who betrayed. So you begin to have that empathy. And when you have that empathy, it begins to soften your heart. Now, a reason that it happened is not an excuse that it happened. So right. Be careful. It's not an excuse. Yeah.
In my own marriage, when my wife was going through this forgiveness process, you know, when she was kind of getting to this stage of empathy, and really recognize the amount of shame in my life that was underpinning so much of my behavior.
Yep.
It, like she said, it gave her a softness of heart towards me. Like she could see little boy Jonathan struggling with his identity and struggling with all these things. And like you said, it did nothing to excuse what I had done, but it gave her a different angle in exactly. which to kind of understand me. And again, these things, there's a distinction between them, but they're interconnected.
Yes.
And I think I'm glad that you put that in there as part of the healing process, not as a way to do anything to excuse a betrayal. That's not what it does. But it does give the betrayed person a new vantage point, a new way to engage seeing that person, just with a new lens.
Exactly. And so it's kind of like fueling and giving you strength and kind of a power or ability to forgive, because you're not necessarily just forgiving the horrible person that did all this to you. You're forgiving the person that did this to you, understanding why, understanding what was behind it. And it is absolutely required. And it is, as long as you keep in mind, it doesn't mean you're excusing. And as long as the betrayer doesn't say, well, I'm not responsible because of this, this, and that, because that's not what we're doing. You know, you have many times where you're talking about all everything the betrayer has to do to heal and get healthy and to, you know, break through the addiction. But it's super important, but it does softens your heart, changes your heart. It is one of the most important things. And I've heard non-Christians talk about forgiving things as horrible as somebody who murdered their child. And being able to go to that person and say, tell me about your life, and hear the story, and being able to say, I forgive you for doing that, by having empathy, not excusing it, allowing the person to stay in jail, you know, and recognizing that, but recognizing that that person is also a hurting person.
Yeah. So now, what are these final two aspects of the forgiveness process?
you have to choose next how to treat the person to reflect forgiveness. So you're going to have, you know, you've been angry, you've cried, you've screamed, you've been withdrawn, you've been untrustworthy, you've been, maybe you've had your times of saying mean things, or, you know, you want to stop and think, what is, it's not pretending, but it is asking yourself, what will, because this is a process, these things are all working, they're targets in motion, right? You're working on these things. You're going to ask yourself, how do I need to treat this person, showing that I am working on forgiving this person? I am going to treat this person with respect. I'm going to treat this person courteously. I am not going to take something in my arsenal of what has happened and punch this person with it when they're down. I'm not going to bring, I can, there's a helpful distinction with, I can bring up a question or ask about something or tell about how I am hurting from something without attacking you for what you've done. So I cannot say, you cheated on me, you're a cheater, when I'm feeling really uncomfortable. I can't do that. That is not the way you treat somebody when you're forgiving somebody. You have to own it. I'm struggling today. I'm having a lot of memory flashbacks. So if I seem kind of quiet, or if I seem, you know, sad, I'm just, for some reason, there's just, I'm getting flooded. And, but you're not going to respond to that person in a way that is the opposite of forgiveness, or you can damage the relationship and make it not work.
Yeah. So now, once someone has gotten through this whole process, can you talk a little bit about how you're not necessarily permanently finished with this process?
Yep. You have to, the last step is you have to manage your thoughts and continue to forgive rather than allowing thoughts of revenge to resurface when the offense comes into your mind. Forgive and forget is not possible. Forgetting is, I always said, the only way I could forget is to have amnesia, and I don't want amnesia, so I'd rather be able to remember. So the further away that you get from the actual trauma, the more that you've processed the trauma and begin to heal from the trauma, the less prominent and the less emotion charged your thoughts will be. So a comforting thought is to recognize, as you move through this, and if you move through it correctly, the betrayed gets their own therapy, their own support group, they move through all these processes, they're courageous with that and facing all of these things. The more you do that and the more you've worked through it, the less emotionally charged these memories are going to be. But nevertheless, they are going to be memories. And I can tell you from my own personal betrayal that happened to me in my marriage, I'm 31 years out and I still have a dream every once in a while. And it's a disturbing dream. I have a thought every once in a while. So I need to choose how to manage that thought. I need to choose, do I want to go down that hole of remembering and pulling up? And resentment means to re-feel. So do I want to re-feel all of the original feelings and pain? No, I don't want to do that. So I choose not to do that. I choose to notice it, to not ignore it. Anything you try to ignore and push away is going to build. So I notice it. Oh, I had that dream. Do I always bring that up to my husband? No, sometimes yes, if I need to, oftentimes no. And I'll just say, you know, I wonder what was going on that brought that dream up. And I'll notice if there's any feelings associated with that. I'll process them, put them where they need to be. But I got to be really careful that I don't go back into the whole thing again. And you just recognize forgiving and forgetting is impossible because you have brain cells that have memory that will be triggered. Oh, and the opposite is also true. Sometimes people will tell you, well, if you're remembering, you didn't forgive.
Oh, yeah.
I want to tell you that is a horrible thing to say, and it is absolutely not true. It is, you often have no control. Your brain pulls up bits of memories when something reminds you of something from the past, and it is not something you have control. That part isn't what you have control on. What you do with it once that it pops up, yes, you can run down that path and stir it all up and get all the feelings again and the resentment and the anger, or you can say, it's over. It's in the past. I chose to forgive that. It's done. I'm not going to go all the way back there. Or maybe something is coming up and something pulled it up. And, you know, there's boundaries that come up in certain circumstances. Maybe going to visit a town where the person lives, because you've got family there, that might pull it up. So there might be a need to talk about it, but maybe address it from a boundary standpoint.
Yeah. I like to think of it this way. You know, God actually cannot forget anything. He's omniscient. And yet he forgives us, which means he chooses to never hold that against us again.
Right.
So in a way, he's choosing not to remember it in the terms of like bringing it back up. And so I think that's actually even more powerful when we think of that in terms of forgiveness, is the fact that, I still hold, in a sense, the memory. I mean, you can't erase the past, right?
Mm-mm.
But we can cover it through forgiveness. Well, there's a covering that can happen. Now, I've got a couple more questions as we land the plane here. One is, what would you say to the woman out there that is just not entered into this process yet, especially for the women who are saying, either I want to use unforgiveness as a tool to control the betrayer, or I am assuming that to be unforgiving is going to keep protecting my own heart. What would you say to the women out there that are struggling to just even get into this process?
Yes. And first of all, don't condemn yourself and beat yourself up for wherever you're at, because this is a really icky thing that you have to work through here. And it's hard. It's messy, I should say. It's messy. So don't just accept yourself where you're at and be honest. This is what I'm dealing with, to your therapist or somebody you're discussing it with. Honest. This is how I'm feeling. So using it to protect yourself, like, I don't want to forgive because then it can't happen to me again.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it can. And forgiveness is only going to keep you in a very dark, painful place. Because like I said, forgiveness is working all the way through even the grief process and coming to a place of peace where you can accept it. And it's not this constant fight over reality. And to stay in the place of I'm angry, I want to see you suffer is really not a good place for you to live. And secondly, forgiveness does not mean that you don't have boundaries. You can forgive, but you're going to protect yourself not with unforgiveness, but with boundaries. And that is where you're going to figure out, one, am I willing to heal, to stay in the marriage and reconcile? And under what circumstances will that be? What does he have to be willing to do? And there's lots of information on that in Jonathan's podcast and materials and his groups. There's a lot that he has to do. And so you get to decide, what do I need to heal the marriage and stay in the marriage? And that's a separate thing from forgiveness. So forgiveness, you're going to forgive whether you're with them or not, because you don't want to live in that place of unforgiveness. So that is a separate process from the boundaries. And boundaries, as you work through that, they can give you a lot of protection. We actually did a podcast on boundaries too.
Yeah. And finally, the other question is, or just what hope would you give to maybe women out there that they've started going through this process, but they just feel stuck. They feel like, I don't know if I can really get through the grief to actually get to the point of forgiveness, or I have forgiven, but my goodness, I've got just these haunting, intrusive thoughts that make it so hard for me to stay in it. What would you say to them?
Well, first of all, when you're at the beginning of this and you haven't even started, it is not going to be something that's going to happen overnight. Don't let anybody tell you that you just need to forgive and be done. And that if you have any thoughts or feelings, then that means you haven't forgiven and shamed you. No, just do one little bit at a time. Allow yourself at the beginning to be in the shock, in shock. Take really good care of yourself. Allow yourself just to be where you're at. And then you're going to need help. You need therapy. You need a support group. Get that. That's part of taking care of you. And that's separate from him getting help for his addiction. So you've got to get that. And what was this? The second part that you asked me was the...
If they're feeling stuck, like they've gone, they've actually said, I have forgiven, but now I can't, I've just got all these thoughts that still overwhelm me that just bring everything back up over and over and over again.
Yeah. And that is really a really difficult place to be in, because a lot of things are going to trigger, and it still, you're going to have triggers. And like I said, I still have triggers, and it's 31 years later, but they're less intense and they're very rare. And I can manage them. But when all the triggers are coming up, it's because you're still in that painful place. And I can tell you, when you heal from the trauma, when you're getting healed from the trauma, and there's going to be less emotion tied with those triggers. One, they're going to come up better. You're going to have processed them. And that's part of the loss. Part the triggers, having the triggers. I have no women... very common. We can't go to a hotel for a vacation. I can't be around him when he's around women with bathing suits. Okay. That's definitely something that's really hard. Sometimes some women get to the point where they're like, I'm not going to, eventually after the forgiveness and he's, you know, worked through his sexual, I'm not going to deprive myself of going to a resort that I love and being on the beach. I'm not going to take that away from myself. So I'm going to work through that trigger. But it does take time if you're in that state. If they're coming back, if it's been quite a long time and you've worked through all of this and all of the triggers, there's something that is sticking, something where you're stuck to where you, I'd say go see a therapist, maybe a trauma therapist. And even EMDR does really well with helping you work through some of those triggers that are very, very emotionally trauma-laden triggers. So you can get help specifically for the triggers. But if you're not through the process yet, where you've worked through the forgiveness and all of that, then, you know, and the grieving and stuff, I'd say, you know, recognize it isn't going to always be like this.
Yeah. Well, Carla, as always, this has been a great conversation. Where can our listeners and viewers go to get more resources from you?
Yes, changemyrelationship.com has access to all of my classes, where I teach my 10 life-saving or relationship-changing principles. I also teach a class on boundaries. I have a class on healing the wounds of your past, which is excellent for working through the grief process, looking at losses, and also walking even deeper through the forgiveness process. And also, I have recorded downloadable versions of all of my studies. You can work on your own podcast. I have my YouTube channel. I do Facebook. All of the links are there. And also I do answer questions. If you have a question, you know, related to question of how to apply what we talked about today to your situation, feel free to email me.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for being with us, Carla.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. I always love talking to you, Jonathan.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we are going to put a lot of info in the show notes, so please check that out. We are also going to put those handouts that Carla made available. And as always, we want to help you take your next step to wholeness in Christ. And so please reach out to us, and we'd love to help you with that. And thanks for being with us. And we'll see you back here again on the next episode of the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.